Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Good morning to you. Happy Thursday. I hope that gives you a bit of a jolt. Good to have you with us. I enjoyed my night off. I really did. First night off and then, of course, the corresponding day off. So it's almost like you get almost 2 days away just because of the schedule. But it's also good to be back as well. Whew, a week removed from the World Series. We're into the NBA, the NHL. Did you know college basketball has tipped off as well? And last night, the UConn Huskies hung their second straight championship banner in the rafters in Storrs, Connecticut. And so congratulations again to Dan Hurley. Now, here's the funny part. We know, of course, they're going for a three-peat, same as the Chiefs. You've got a couple of different teams that are poised to potentially make that history. But because they lost four guys to the NBA off their starting roster last season, they've got just one dude left. And remember, Alex Caraban, who we had here on the show last year, he's a junior now, he submitted his name for the NBA and then pulled his name back and changed his mind, decided he would stay at UConn and felt like they could potentially be a three-peat threat. I mean, they muscled every other team. They flexed on him too. Every other team in the March Madness run that they had, they were so good. But yeah, losing four starters, Alex is the one remaining. And I know it's Sacred Heart, not certainly the caliber of a UConn, but he has 20 points, 7 rebounds, 7 block shots. Wait, hold on. 20 points, 7 assists, 7 block shots, and 6 rebounds in that game. So right now, even as Hurley is asking for patience, everything with UConn goes through Alex Caraban. But he's so versatile, and he's learned so much in those 2 years as part of a championship roster. I remember asking him last year about the kind of charmed life he's led when he first got to UConn and what it was like to be part of a championship when he was a freshman. So he's the centerpiece now, and Dan Hurley's going to rely on him a ton. So welcome back to the UConn Huskies. Congratulations to them. They've been such a good story over the course of these last couple years and what Dan Hurley's done with that program. Basketball in the NBA level with an interesting storyline that didn't have a chance to talk about when I was gone. Joel Embiid missing, getting suspended for multiple games because of his contact with a reporter. Joel is passionate. Sometimes his emotions get the best of him, which is pretty much human nature. I can speak to that myself personally. I know that this is a hard thing, but unless they take it as load management, I do believe that you've got to draw a line when it comes to contact. Now, if you're going to have the same type of standard for fans who come into contact with players on purpose, of course, not incidental, then you need to also have that same respect for players who might then make contact with officials. We know that's a no-no. Or other professionals who are doing their jobs, and in this case, the media. So I know it's a hard thing, and it's not been a fun start to the season for Joel, though some of this is the Sixers' own doing, and certainly this is his mistake and his error. He's got to own it. But the Sixers, they were on the West Coast taking on the Clippers, and Norman Powell has a career night, so the Clippers get the best of the Sixers in that one. Also had a great matchup between the Thunder and the Nuggets. And you don't hear about banner nights for Russell Westbrook very often, but we had some vintage Russ.
Westbrook has him between the rings. Crossover move to the rim, leans in. Layup good! It's the Russell Westbrook from 15 years ago, or maybe even five. He's got 29 in the game. Denver leads at 103-99. Westbrook is taking over this basketball game.
Down 16 in the third quarter, the Nuggets are able to rally. That's the call on Nuggets radio. And they get help from a bunch of different places. Sure, you're going to get the gaudy stat line from Nikola Jokic. Listen to this. 23 points, 20 rebounds, and 16 assists. Seriously? That's, wow. It's gaudy, as I was saying. It's like a lot of extra bling that catches your eye. And so he, of course, contributes. And Russell Westbrook. But how about get to know the name Peyton Watson?
Porter to the rim. Goes reverse side. No good. Put back Joker. Blocked. Joker got the board. In the corner, Porter. Head fake and a drive. Kick out Watson. Three. Got it! His second one on the homestand. I guess when the pressure's on, Peyton Watson hits threes. Denver leads it by seven, their big lead of the night.
There's a great early season clash in the Western Conference, and we'll get a lot of these. The Thunder picking up their first loss of the season, though, because there's a block shot in the final second, and that Peyton Watson three, his second of the season, right? So you've got a Michael Porter who starts slow and comes up big, and then Russell Westbrook with 29. So good for the Nuggets, but also handing the Thunder their first loss. There is still a team undefeated in the NBA, and we'll get to the matchup between the Warriors and the Celtics as well. But it's always fun to kind of like what we talk about in the NFL to see which teams can be the last one standing. Now, in the NFL, it's different because they only play one game per week, theoretically. But it's always, yeah, it's interesting to see who comes hot out of the gate. So we know the Thunder were going to, as long as they were healthy, because they were so good last year. The Suns, they've won six in a row now, and Kevin Durant is on a tear. So you've got Phoenix, OKC, and the Warriors, which I think comes out of left field a little bit. And it's not so much the Klay Thompson move. They lost Steph Curry for a little bit because of an early kind of freak injury. But he looks real good now. And this was on the road in Boston. Now, just as a reminder, I didn't remember the margin of victory for the Celtics last year. But you may remember, especially those of you listening to our New England affiliates, they shellacked the Warriors on their way to a title last season, beating Golden State by 52 in Boston.
Wiggins shoveled up top to Draymond. Draymond waiting as Hield circles by. Inside cut. Curry got free for a reverse. A back screen. Freedom from Holiday. And the Warriors hit the century mark, 100-99. And the Warriors will bring the ball up, leading by three. 2:40 to go in the game. Curry off a screen. Catches. Holiday recovers. Holiday, such a smart defender. Curry dribbles in the paint, goes all the way, scooped him a hoop over White. It's up and good. 104-99, 2:23 to go in the game.
Already, the fact that they're not trailing by 20 or 30 or 50 tells you something about the Warriors in Boston. And Steph Curry, he has 27. But one of the moves that I like from the offseason, as much as it's weird to see Klay Thompson in a different uniform and no longer a splash brother. Also, he's sharing a backcourt with Kyrie Irving. Still trying to wrap my brain around that. Buddy Hield, a good pickup for the Warriors because he's also a volume shooter and has got great range.
Curry gets Horford. Shot clock at 7. 49 seconds left. Pass to Buddy Hield. White corner 3. Swish! 111-104, time out, Boston.
Tim Roy on the Warriors Radio Network. I remember a couple of years ago where Golden State was abysmal on the road. I think they went through the entire regular season and won just 11 games away from the Bay Area. They've started out 5-0 on the road, and they've got this early East Coast road trip. They're now 7-1, which is a huge surprise. We know their potential. Steph is terrific, but as I say, had the ankle injury. He's now played a couple of games in a row. Andrew Wiggins was in double figures. They're relying on guys like a Buddy Hield right out of the gate. And so the fact that they're sharing the best record in the West is, yeah, it's interesting. By the way, I think my favorite part of this whole game is the fact that the Celtics fans booed Steve Kerr when he was introduced before the game. Now, do you guys know why? Not because Steve Kerr is a championship-winning coach with the Warriors. That's old news. And you would think he might get some respect because he led the U.S. team to Olympic gold. Nah, that's actually the reason why they booed him, because Jason Tatum was so lightly used this Olympic run. And I still don't get it. I'll be perfectly honest. I think it's weird. I get that you have a lot of bodies and you've got the best players in the league, but you're telling me that somehow one of the top, I say top three players in the NBA. That's certainly up for debate, and you can quibble if you want. One of the top three players in the NBA who's coming off a championship, you don't somehow have a few more minutes for him in your Olympic run? That's just weird. It's weird, and I know Steve Koch is all kinds of championship Hall of Fame level coach, but I do think it's terrific that the fans were taking up for Jason Tatum. And I'm not saying anything new, because I said it during the Olympics as well. Why waste Jason's time then if you're not going to use him? And how do you not with everything that he brings to the table? But maybe it's better for Jason that he had the time off, right? Because he had played deep into the season. They were able to get the championship. I know Jalen didn't go. Obviously, now he's dealing with some injuries too. But sometimes when teams play so deep into a summer, with the NBA Finals going now into mid-June, even though the Celtics didn't play nearly as many games as would have been required because they were ending series early, that still puts a ton of extra stress on your body. So with Jason Tatum, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that he didn't play a ton of minutes right on the heels of an NBA championship. But good for you, Celtics fans. I love that we as fans get to take up the offenses of our favorite players. You didn't treat our guy right, so you're going to hear an earful from us. Jason, though, he's taken the high road, and he said this all along about the Olympics, that it's not anything extra for him.
It wasn't on my mind. Just another Wednesday. Another game, another opportunity to come in and try to be the best player I can be.
Just another Wednesday. It's just another manic Wednesday, or just another wacky Wednesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know, I'm so sorry about the singing, but good for you, Celtics fans. I hope Steve Kerr hears it from anytime he encounters any of these Olympic slights, that he hears it from the fans, because that's funny. We do not forget. We hold grudges as sports fans, which is awesome. Steph looks good. I mean, he's back, and he's probably better than ever. The Warriors and the Thunder and the Phoenix Suns all at 7-1. But how about, and the Celtics are 7-2, so no slouches there. How about the Cavaliers, though? Only team that is still undefeated, has started out the season a franchise record 9-0.
What I think about is this team and the camaraderie they have and the chemistry we have going, and how connected we are. That's what carries you to 9-0. So it's more a little bit, I've been fortunate to land with a really good group, a group that's been really successful.
Kenny Atkinson, of course, of an NBA veteran, a lot of years, first coach in NBA history to start 9-0 in his first season with a new team. So he's been around, but he's now in Cleveland. And they had some good building blocks there, of course. But he brings an edge. He walks into a locker room and already has credibility because of what he's done in the NBA previously. So the Cavaliers are at 9-0. And I wonder, speaking of fan bases, if that helps kind of, I don't know, take some of the edge off with the Browns being not just 2-7, but also the whole situation with Deshaun Watson. Forget adding insult to injury. It's just injury, insult, an injury and after insult with him. I can imagine that they're pretty salty about it. I would be too. But maybe this helps in having the Cavaliers, not to mention the Guardians this season, getting to where they did in the NBA, in the MLB postseason. It's my hey, the sky is not falling conversation. Who would be your MVP if the NFL were handing them out in the midseason? Not handing them out in the midseason, but who would be the NFL MVP? We're taking a lot of your responses at Amy After Hours. We're retweeting those on our show account and then also on our Facebook page. For me, it's Jared Goff, and I kind of feel smart, kind of, because I was touting him as a dark horse this time last year. Now, he didn't end up winning it, of course, and Lamar is on track already with phenomenal numbers. Josh Allen in that conversation. We've had a few dark horse candidates mentioned, though. So find us on either social media site and you can weigh in. Had the privilege of welcoming Amy Trask back to the show earlier. California girl joined us in our second hour. And we had a chance to talk about some of the great storylines in the NFL right now. Bring back a portion of that. Love to hear from you in the wake of the trade deadline going into week 10. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It is. Yes, it is. How do you feel about pizza, leftover pizza at 5:21 a.m. Eastern time or just 5:21 a.m. any time zone? Because I have to go to the grocery store after the show and I'm thinking I can't go hungry. It smells good. Oof. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I don't know if this is sacrilege, but I'm doing it anyway. I don't know if my other half will notice I stole the last piece of leftover pizza from the fridge.
He will.
Just disappeared. I'm not going to mention it. That piece of pizza that will not be named. We had a chance to talk to longtime Raiders CEO and NFL analyst Amy Trask on the show. And we talked about a variety of topics, including her advice. What would she do if she was in the Browns front office when it comes to Deshaun Watson? So you can check out the full conversation on our podcast. It's available every weekday morning as soon as the show is done. But wanted to bring back a couple portions of the convo just because she's so good and great insight. We were talking about some of the receivers who just got traded at the deadline. Amari Cooper with Josh Allen, and certainly mentioned DeAndre Hopkins with Patrick Mahomes, and why these guys are able to adjust so quickly.
Well, I think it can depend on the player. And again, I'm not looking to equivocate, but you're talking about receivers, the men you just named, that are very, very, very skilled at their position. And you can bring them along if you are a team, if you are a coach, as quickly as you wish, or you can bring them along a little bit more slowly, depending on the player. We're going to focus on these routes. We're going to ask you to make these plays. You may not expose them to the entire playbook immediately, although, you know, you mentioned the Chiefs, and Andy Reid is just such a spectacular coach. And, of course, Patrick Mahomes, a phenomenal quarterback. They get together with a new receiver at practice, or they stay after practice. They run routes. It's a position where you can adapt pretty darn quickly.
In that division, the AFC West, it's kind of interesting. For a few years now, it's been the Chiefs and everybody else has got losing records. We've got two teams in the Broncos and the Chargers that are both sitting at 5 wins and at the very least could offer a challenge as they start to play each other. What have you seen with the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh as their new head coach?
Well, boy, you're absolutely right to focus on both of those teams, of course, and I'll start with the Chargers. I didn't look at the numbers after this last week of games, but going into this weekend, the Chargers were giving up the fewest points of any team. Going into week 9, they were giving up on average only 13 points per game. That's Jim Harbaugh. That is what Jim is bringing to that team, among other things. I'm a big, big, big fan of Jim Harbaugh as a coach and as a person in many, many respects. I don't mean to suggest just as a coach. He was with us in Oakland. I thoroughly enjoyed working with him while we were together in Oakland. Al Davis had tremendous respect and appreciation for Jim. And actually, there's a fun little aside there. When Jim came to Al and said, "Look, I have an opportunity to go coach in college. And, you know, I love that you gave me a chance and I love being here, but I really want to go pursue this dream." And Al was very, very, very supportive of that. And then Jim throws in, you know, it's kind of like when you were in the NFL and then you went back to coach in college. And Al said, I went to USC. You're going to USD. It was just a funny, funny moment where Al teased him a bit. But look, I think the world of Jim as a head coach, not simply on the defensive side of the ball, but I do credit him with what the Chargers are doing defensively. But he also did something I think is so, so smart. He added Mark Trestman to their staff. I don't know Mark's official title. He's not their offensive coordinator, but he is in every offensive meeting room. And Mark does what the best coaches do. He best positions players to be their best. We had him with us in Oakland as well. I think you're going to see Justin Herbert continue to shine and shine and shine. And I credit Mark Trestman with a tremendous amount of that. And of course, credit Jim for bringing Mark in. We had Mark in Oakland. I know his offensive mind. He really is a coaching savant.
Longtime Raiders CEO Amy Trask, now with CBS Sports as an analyst and also podcast host, What the Football with Susie Schuster. It's a great listen. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, Amy, while we're talking about the West, of course, your team, the Raiders, they right now share the worst record in football, though there's a bunch of teams that are sitting there at 2-7. What stands out with the team?
Well, they've obviously just made, and by the way, I'm sorry I skipped over the Broncos. I got so excited about the Chargers that if you want me to go back to the Broncos, I will. But as to the Raiders, they obviously just made a fairly sweeping change, terminated three. I always like how I say terminated. Fired would be the word I'm actually looking for. I'm trying to be a little more genteel, but they let go three coaches after their last game. They're heading into their bye. They've added Norv Turner to the staff. Norv was with the Raiders when I was there. His son is with the Raiders. And look, Norv will do what dads do. He's going to want to help his son be the best he can be. So that might help the Raiders a bit. They've got some holes on the roster, but there are a lot of issues there. And my heart is with Raider fans because I will always and forever want the very, very, very best for them.
Tom Brady is a winner. We know that. Can't imagine he'd want to be associated with a franchise if he didn't believe in it, right? Not just for the sake of being a minority owner. How much impact can a minority owner have on a team, Amy?
As much impact as the controlling owner wishes for that minority owner to have. Every team in the league is required by league rule to have one controlling owner, meaning you can be a limited partnership, you can be an LLC, you can be a corporation, whatever ownership structure you want, but there must be one designated controlling owner who has to own a certain percentage of that team. And in the case of the Raiders, that is the Davis family. That is Mark Davis as the controlling owner voice. He can give Tom as much say-so as he wishes to give Tom. And let me make something really clear, Amy. People think, oh, Amy, meaning me, Amy, not you, Amy, do you have an issue with Tom Brady? And the answer is no, no, no. Tom Brady did in that game, and we know what game I'm talking about, he did in that game what every fan of every team wants their quarterback to do. He did nothing wrong. We can have a different conversation about the officials, but that's not the point. I have no issue whatsoever with Tom, and I hope for Raider fans that Tom does help bring out the best in the franchise.
I had a chance to listen to your most recent podcast episode, again, What the Football with Susie Schuster. It's really interesting because I heard your conversation about Dennis Allen and about the Saints making a change in season. And I know it would vary from team to team. We've already seen a couple now get removed, like Robert Saleh. What type of factors are considered when that change is a possibility, when you're talking about removing a head coach in season?
That's a hard thing to do. It's a hard decision to come to. And look, I worked for an NFL team owner who let quite a few coaches go at varying times. You've got to have a feel for what's going on in the locker room. You know, are people still responding to the coach? Are players still responding to the coach? Are other coaches still responding to the coach? Many owners take into account the fan base. When you're losing games at home, like we saw the Saints losing, and you're the owner of a team and you're listening to your fans booing and doing all sorts of things, there are team owners who factor that in as well. If you just think, we have to make a change and I can't wait any longer, you do it mid-season. But the other thing that does for your team is you're able to maybe start looking around a little bit before other teams. You can't tamper. There's restrictions on what you can do in terms of other currently employed coaches, but it gives you a little bit of a head start on figuring out what you want to do the next season. I don't think that's why most people do it, but that is an issue.
Does the strategy work to make a change midseason?
I don't think there is a general answer to that. I really do think it's an it depends. I don't think there's one solid answer to that question. Look, the question I have always asked in football and otherwise, in business and otherwise, is and do what? You know, there were times that our fans were yelling to me, Amy, you need to get rid of the quarterback or you need to cut this player. And I would say, and do what? And the same applies to terminating, firing a head coach. And do what? If you are going to make a change, ask yourself and do what? And if your answer isn't at a minimum as good as the status quo or presumably better than the status quo, then you need to think about why you're making that change.
Always appreciate the insight of Amy Trask when she's with us here after hours with Amy Lawrence. Well, you kind of set me up for another question I wanted to ask. I was hearing the comments of Cleveland Browns general manager Andrew Berry, who really at this point either doesn't have an answer or isn't revealing his answer about Deshaun Watson and what happens moving forward. So let's say they ask you for your insight. Where do you even begin?
Well, that's a great question, fellow Amy. Where do you even begin? Because you have the issue of the injury. How long will it take for him to heal? How well will he heal? What kind of a player will he be when he comes back from the injury? You have a contract that is just sitting on your shoulders. It's just the weight of that contract. They're in quite a pickle, so to speak. They have to factor in cap consequences, cash consequences, what they want to do with their football team. There's just a lot of factors going into that, and that contract is going to weigh heavily.
You mentioned the fan base. Obviously, the Cleveland fans are so involved with their team. It's an emotional relationship, and they've been through so much. I don't know whether or not that ownership considers the fan base, but I'm thinking about the fans and the locker room and how much of a downer and a weight it can be on them, too, just feeling like an entire season's been flushed.
Well, you're absolutely right. I do feel very, very strongly that you do have to take your fans into account because you can't have it both ways. You can't want the support of your fans but not care about your fans. Now, of course, that doesn't mean you're letting your fans make roster decisions. You're not letting your fans make coaching decisions. You're not letting your fans call plays. I'm not suggesting that. But I do think some owners factor in fan reaction. Clearly, they didn't factor in fan reaction in signing him, and now they have that contract sitting around weighing them down.
Two teams that have very passionate fan bases who've been starved for winners over the past 10, 15 years. In the case of the Lions, even longer, the Commanders and the Lions, and both sitting on 7 wins right now in the NFC. I feel like these two would be great sentimental favorites should they reach the playoffs and put together a run. You'll have a lot of fans from other fan bases start to jump on board with them. They're in varying stages of their kind of rebuild, if you will. But what do you see or what do you spot? What stands out about the culture that these two teams are building?
You know, you just hit that one slow and easy right across the plate, to use the baseball reference, because Jared Goff is an alum of my college. We're both alum of Cal Berkeley, so
nice.
Special love for Jared Goff. And I don't think the Rams handled moving on from him in a great way. And you know what? To the Rams' credit, they acknowledged that and said, we didn't handle it well, and they've apologized. So they've all moved on. You're exactly right. This is just very, very, very exciting for two fan bases that have been longing for this for a long time. The Commanders are an entirely different team now than they were several years ago. They seem to have just really done spectacularly well with their rookie quarterback selection. And, you know, I talked about Terry McLaurin on CBS Sports the other day. We had to identify a player who should be on cloud nine or feel really good. And I think his numbers, his statistics are phenomenal, but I think he should also feel really good about the fact that he is helping a rookie quarterback develop and being part of that development for the whole franchise. So Commanders fans should be extremely happy. And Lions fans, my gosh, let me tell you, obviously the team with which I was affiliated wasn't in the NFC North. It wasn't in the NFC at all. We were an AFC team, but we did go to Green Bay a few times during my years with the Raiders, and that is a hard, hard place to go in and win. And watching the Lions, they're very impressive. And you know, remember when Dan Campbell was hired and everybody was just giving him so much crap about the comment about biting kneecaps? Well, you know what? Bite them kneecaps, because he is really proving himself to be a heck of a coach.
Good stuff with Amy Trask, longtime Raiders CEO, now has the podcast with Susie Schuster, What the Football. They always get great guests. They're associated with Rich Eisen, his podcast network. But really, Amy's reputation precedes her. So I definitely recommend that you check it out. She is a little bit like what I envisioned she would be, as frank and honest and, let's be fair, blunt with Al Davis and the relationship that she's described with him at different times. And this is Amy just kind of putting it out there. And she tells good stories, too. So you can find her whole conversation. There's more, of course, as part of our podcast at Amy After Hours. Producer Pete puts up the link every weekday morning and also on our Facebook page. I usually throw it up there in the afternoon, so we have two different times. Who is your midseason MVP in the NFL? We'll get to some of your answers. And, of course, we've been taking calls, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And here's our latest sports update. Here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Well, and the injury to Dak Prescott, apparently worse than originally thought. Reportedly looking at more than 4 weeks off. He has part of his hamstring reportedly pulled off the bone. Dallas has yet to put Dak on IR just yet. Browns and GM Andrew Berry refused to get into the future plans with Deshaun Watson and his hold on the starting job, saying they just need to focus on his recovery from the Achilles injury. But how would Berry assess Watson's performance this season before that injury?
We haven't played well as a team, and we haven't played well as a unit on offense. And I think oftentimes when you don't play well on offense, obviously your starting quarterback and your play caller will get the most, you will get the most criticism.
Panthers sticking with Bryce Young against the Giants in Germany. Patrick Mahomes giving the latest on his re-aggravated ankle injury from Monday night against the Bucs.
It's doing good, you know. Obviously when you have a little bit of a roll, it's a little bit of sore. But I'm able to move around and look forward to getting out of practice and seeing how I can push it as the week goes on.
Checking the NBA with the Cavs, just continue to roll.
Mitchell comes left of the lane. Put it up. I got it. A foul again. On two straight possessions, Donovan Mitchell takes serious body contact, banks it in, and a chance for another and one.
29 points for Donovan Mitchell. Cavs remain perfect at 9-0 on the season. Down the Pelicans 131-122. Call courtesy of the Cavs Radio Network. Rest of scores, Nuggets survived the Thunder 124-122. Behind another triple-double from Nikola Jokic, who had 24. Russell Westbrook with 29. Suns clipped the Heat 115-112 behind 32 from Kevin Durant. Warriors handled the Celtics 118-112. Kings lit up the Raptors 122-107. Mavericks raced the Bulls 119-99. Hawks topped the Knicks 121-116. Rockets overpowered the Spurs 127-100. Grizzlies pound the Lakers 131-114 as they didn't have Anthony Davis, sat with a foot injury. LeBron James 39 in the loss. Pacers too much for the Magic 118-111, and the Hornets upend the Pistons 108-107. College football, Ohio suffocated Kent State 41-0, while Northern Illinois bounced Western Michigan 42-28. And college hoops, UConn dominated Sacred Heart 92-56, while Auburn rocked Vermont 94-43. I'm Marco Belletti.
855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with us, the Infinity Sports Network. Give us a call, 855-212-4227.
Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In behind center. Jared takes, gives to Montgomery. No, he's going to throw it to Montgomery. Montgomery makes the catch to the 25, shakes a man there, gets down to the 20-yard line, picks up a block to the 15, and he slides down to the 13-yard line. That'll take us inside the two-minute warning. The Lions are going to kneel this one out. It's going to be a road victory for the Detroit Lions.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm still going Jared Goff as MVP. He was a dark horse last year for me at this time, and I do believe that he is one of the main dudes in the conversation. Now, you can look at stats, of course. You can also look at records. You can ask the question of what happens to this team if there's no Goff, if there's no Lamar, if there's no la la la. Right now, one of the reasons that I give him the edge is because I don't believe that he has, well, he has Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. So that running game, that offensive line, they're terrific. I don't believe that he has to split votes, if that makes sense. Right now, both Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, you can make a case for each of them as MVP. I'd love to see non-quarterbacks be part of the MVP conversation. And adding a Derrick Henry with all of his experience and his stiff arm ability still, that takes such pressure off Lamar. Does that mean Lamar isn't as good? No. Only that you're sharing the load, which means you remove one of them and the team is probably still good. In my opinion, that's obviously hypothetical, but you've removed one of them, you're still going to get either a great running back or you're going to get an amazing quarterback who's the reigning NFL MVP. Would the team be as good? Would their stats be quite as lofty? No. But I don't think it takes away that much from what the other guy is doing. Though again, I do think they make the other guy's job easier and they can share the load. It's kind of like the oxen, if you use one of the metaphors or analogies that we get sometimes about sharing a burden, right? An oxen with their big wooden plows that they would pull behind them, right? They have the burden, the yoke that's on their necks, and how you share that between two oxen and it becomes a lot lighter load. Well, that's the case in the backfield for these Baltimore Ravens. With Jared Goff, he's got weapons around him for sure. But you take Jared Goff out of there, and that offense doesn't go. Could they run the ball? Maybe a little bit, sure. But it'd be a heck of a lot easier to defend against the run because of the fact that they wouldn't have their quarterback. Also, I do think you've got two really strong candidates for Baltimore that might end up cannibalizing some of the votes. Now, quarterbacks tend to get more of the lean, if you will. Who is your NFL midseason MVP? I really, really like the idea of Saquon Barkley. I don't know that he can win it, especially if you've got another incredible running back right now in Derrick Henry. But I do think Saquon has injected life and energy and athleticism and something that Jalen Hurts desperately needed, that the Eagles desperately needed, especially early when they did not have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith on the field. So that's a dark horse for me. I've seen a dark horse of Kirk Cousins, which I think is interesting. Now, depending upon what happens the rest of this NFL season, I could see where Kirk would have a few votes thrown his way. So, yeah, John says Kirk is a dark horse MVP, started slow off the injury. Remember, that was the Achilles. And actually, it was mid-season last year? Not even a full year that he's had to recover. But as a 500-yard game and over 2,000 yards passing, John then points out that Atlanta is also in first place. I've seen people touting Atlanta as a Super Bowl contender. I'd feel like those two names, Atlanta and Super Bowl, in the same sentence might cause fans to break out in hives. So I don't know if you want to do that. So there's one. Another one from Sean, TJ Watt for league MVP. Steelers win with defense. He makes the defense go. So a couple for Kirk Cousins, a couple for Saquon Barkley, a dark horse then for TJ Watt, a lot of Josh Allen, a lot of Jared, a lot of Jaden Daniels. And that's kind of where this conversation started. Former Commanders QB and overall number one pick Alex Smith was talking about the midseason award, and he does elevate the Jaden Daniels conversation because of the fact that he played with the organization.
You could start making an argument for who's the MVP, who is the truly the most valuable player to their team. And I don't know how Jaden Daniels is not right there in this argument. What he's done for this organization as a rookie is incredible. Think about how dysfunctional, I mean, I was there. Think about the history of this organization. And for him to come out, and obviously Dan Quinn too, and Cliff Kingsbury and this entire coaching staff, I don't want to leave them out of this, but right there is this young quarterback and how well he is playing, how consistent he is, how dynamic he is. And so at the halfway mark, he has to be in the middle of the MVP conversation, without question.
Alex on Sirius XM NFL Radio. I've actually seen a couple votes for Penei Sewell, who's on that Lions offensive line, and the fact that he should be getting some attention as well. We've never had an offensive lineman win MVP. We've never had a receiver win MVP. We've had a kicker one time before my time. Not before my time, before I was watching football. We've had two defensive players, Lawrence Taylor and who was the other, Pete? Alan Page, which was definitely before our time.
Purple people eaters.
Right. Most of the time it's quarterbacks. Doesn't mean it has to be. It just means that they touch the ball the majority of, well, every snap offensively, and they've got more control over what happens and what doesn't happen. So love to hear those responses, but I do appreciate the few of the dark horse candidates that I just not thought of. At this point, I think I'm going Jared Goff. There are a few Patrick Mahomes in there, which I also think is fascinating considering he's not played his best football, but there is an element to that where you could say, hey, he's not played his best football, but he's also not had any receivers. He's had a revolving door of injuries, and that means different bodies. They bring back Kareem Hunt. They bring DeAndre Hopkins in, but he's barely been with the team for all of 10 minutes. So that there's more there. Some of you are saying, well, Jaden Daniels, he does more with less. When you talk about doing more, you can't be better than 8-0, but I don't think record should be the entire consideration. So I wonder if it's about the DMV with Lamar and Derrick Henry versus Jaden Daniels. Robert is in West Virginia. Robert, welcome to After Hours. What do you think?
Oh, Chris Jones. Everybody forgot, leaves him out. He's a beast. They have to double-team him all the time.
He is. He's become one of the best defenders, one of the best pass rushers.
He is the best pass rusher as of right now, yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I just think it's not a coincidence, of course, that after he signed his contract last year, it took him a little bit to settle in the team, but that defense was a world-class defense last season and a major reason why they won the Super Bowl.
That's right. I'm a Chiefs fan, and around here in Virginia, I'm all here in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore. What has Jackson done? He hasn't won a Super Bowl. When he wins a Super Bowl, they can let us, these Chiefs fans, know.
Well, right. But of course, you know that it's nothing to do with the MVP. But you're right, that hasn't happened yet. So you hear more Baltimore than Commanders.
Well, yeah. Well, both, really. You know.
You're surrounded.
Yeah, I have this Cowboy fan. He wanted to fight over it. He said, we're going to lose. We're going to eventually lose. He just kept going on and going on.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth that.
Yeah.
All right, well, good to hear from you. You stay strong there.
Yeah, I will. I have a son who lives out in Kansas. I'm going to go down and see him. And he doesn't live that far. He lives in Emporia, Kansas, like 60 miles from Kansas City. I'm going to go see the game.
Have fun. Bye. Enjoy that. Certainly an 8-0 team. It's hard to be talking smack about them at this point. I think Chris Jones, because of his experience and everything he's been through, he's phenomenal. So whether or not the sack numbers are there, he's always in the mix. He's always putting pressure on guys. So, yeah, I do think that that Chris is awesome. And it's not just the pass rush. It's everything he brings to the table as the anchor for that defense. That's one of the reasons why their defense is so good, like sneaky good, bend but not break good, because he and others, like a Nick Bolton, right? Ward is another one. They've got some defense members that have experience as well. So I do appreciate what the Chiefs are able to do on D, as much as it gets overshadowed a bunch by Patrick Mahomes. But not a ton of traffic for Mahomes as MVP. More about some of the other kind of gaudier quarterback numbers now. Again, Lamar, Jaden, Josh, Jared. We're on a first-name basis, you know. So you could always weigh in at Amy After Hours or at A-Law Radio. Then also on our Facebook page. A couple of things. This is not really corrections department, just intel that you all have passed along. We were talking about DJ Moore, who's caught passes from 13 different quarterbacks in his career. Terry McLaurin has had 11 different quarterbacks in his 5 years, and that comes from Zeke. Thank you, Zeke. And also Josh Allen has 5 fumbles this season, so thanks for weighing in. We'll talk to you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!